Hello and welcome to the Sunday Salon, the podcast that celebrates brilliant books and the women who write them. I absolutely loved Cecily von Zegesa's Cobble Hill, released last autumn. It's really funny and quirky and smart without being heavy going, full of subtle social satire and astute observations. It was particularly pleasing as Cecily's best known for writing the Gossip Girl books, which in turn launched the hugely successful TV show. And I was a mega Gossip Girl fan back in the day. I loved our interview, which took place late last year. We chatted about everything from her background as a trainee ballerina to what it was like having her books become such a small screen juggernaut, and why it took so long for her to finish Cobble Hill, until she signed up to a Brooklyn co-working space, that is. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Cecily, welcome. Thank you so much for coming on the Sunday Salon. I'm so excited to speak to you.
Well, thank you for having me on. I'm very pleased. And it's actually your fault that I'm not hungover, because there was a lot going on here yesterday. And I purposely didn't celebrate it with alcohol because I wanted to be coherent.
Oh, God, I feel so guilty now. I am. So I should probably explain to listeners, because they're going to be hearing this a little bit later. But it's actually the Sunday after the results of the US presidential election were announced. So you have a new president. I mean, how are you feeling about that?
Very relieved. Well, I mean, we actually don't have a new president.
No, not yet. You have a new president-elect, and you have a sort of incumbent who's kind of refusing to acknowledge this at the moment.
But I'm in Brooklyn, in New York City, and it was very noisy here yesterday, and just a lot of joy in the streets and people honking their horns and banging pots and pans and just sort of spontaneously screaming. It was so funny. When I was out with my dog, as I am kind of most of the time, people were just walking along and then all of a sudden go, woo! Yeah, just these little outbursts of happiness. So it's a huge relief.
And of course it comes at the end of quite a traumatic year for the world, quite a very traumatic year for the world, but quite a traumatic year for New York as well. I mean, we're recording remotely, obviously, because we're on the complete other sides of the Atlantic, but you know, I've been doing basically all my interviews remotely this year. I was speaking to quite a lot of people in New York, and you had that incredibly brutal lockdown. I mean, what has the year been like for you?
The city was in really a terrible situation in the spring, starting in March. I suppose what was, I don't want to say nice, because it probably wasn't nice for them, but it was nice for me that my children, I have two teenagers, and we were all home together and did a lot of just cooking and being silly and, you know, just that sort of looking for the silver lining, I guess, as you say, in what was going on. But my husband and I actually both had the virus in March. And so it was also nice to be able to have two capable teenagers to like sort of do the chores and be able to feed themselves and all of that. I don't know what we would have done if we had small children. Yeah, I lost my sense of taste and smell. That was an interesting experience.
Has it come back yet?
It has. But there. It's funny. There's little like moments of I'll think that I want to eat something, and then I'll be eating it, and just think like this doesn't taste the way it's supposed to. So I do feel like my sense of taste has been altered dramatically. I have to put hot pepper on everything and lots of garlic and onions and things like that to be able to taste anything, or salt, lots of salt. We have our health back and we're fine. So, I guess the interesting thing is for me as a writer, I work at home anyway, and I spend a lot of time kind of like being quiet and in isolation. So sort of psychologically, I suppose, for me, and just sort of my day-to-day routine, actually didn't really change that much. And I know it's hard for people to believe that, but I think writers are a sort of peculiar breed, and I'm not particularly social. I don't really like parties and big groups of people and all that sort of thing. So it has been, it's been really interesting being in this city this whole time. We didn't really go anywhere. I think actually for about a week in the summer, we went to a lake in New Hampshire, but we've been hearing a lot, or I've been hearing a lot about what's going on in England, because my husband is actually English. And so, we were just talking to his mom and dad, and they live sort of just outside Nottingham.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, it's been difficult, but we're okay.
Have you found it sort of affected your kind of writing and your creativity at all?
Well, I have to say I'm incredibly relieved that the work for my new book, Cobble Hill, was complete pretty much before the pandemic hit the world. I had finished all of my revisions. The only thing left to do were the sort of back and forth with the copy editor and proofreading and that sort of thing. And that I was doing really well into the summer, I would say, sort of starting in, I think it was like April to July. And that's just sending back, you know, little tiny typos and things like that. But if I had had to do some of the larger revisions or any kind of writing in the spring, I'm actually not sure if I could have done it. Not because I was ill, but because of the sort of mental energy that it would have required and the focus. I think a lot of people had this kind of like, you know, you could read something that was a paragraph long, but no longer, and everybody was sort of turning to television because you could sort of, you know, sit like a zombie and stare at it. But I haven't actually done any big writing since all of this, little edits and things like that. And actually my editor was asking me sort of like, well, what about the next one? What's next? And I still haven't committed to anything. I suppose actually the one thing that I am trying to do right now is adapt Cobble Hill for television to see if I can try my hand at that sort of writing, because Gossip Girl, my other books that you might know about, I didn't actually write the adaptation.
Can I just pick up on something you said earlier, which is that you didn't like parties and that you were quite solitary. And it's really interesting because, as you mentioned, that there was the kind of whole Gossip Girl phenomenon, you know, the best-selling books, which became the huge series. And much of what you've done deals with that kind of social observation, that sort of, I suppose, skewering of social types. That's kind of an interesting juxtaposition, that sort of, I suppose, the slightly introverted tendency with that kind of social observation one. Do you think it's because you were an introvert, someone who was perhaps looking on from the sidelines some of the time, that you were able to observe human nature and characters in that way? Do you think that's made you a better writer?
Well, I don't know if it's made me a better writer, but I think in order to be a writer at all, you have to be a sort of keen observer and just pay attention. And it's hard to pay attention when you're doing all the talking. Gossip Girl was very much sort of about that kind of like insider outsider dichotomy, I suppose. And you know, people would always ask me, like, you know, there was that thing of like, are you Blair? Are you Serena? And I was like, no, actually, I'm Dan.
Dan, yes.
You know, I'm not, I was never, it was like, I would have been invited to the parties, but I wouldn't go. Or if I did go, I'd be sitting off kind of like with one other person, just kind of watching everything happen. And that's still the case. You know, even yesterday when everyone was sort of like dancing in the streets, I was watching everyone dancing in the streets. You know, it's like, it's just sort of my nature. And I think that is kind of the nature of writing, because you sort of need to see everything from all sides. Sort of be able to kind of decimate what's happening, and also kind of find the I like to sort of find the humor in things too, not take everything too seriously. So there's a lot going on. Well, when I'm observing.
Can you tell me how that feeds into Cobble Hill? We're talking a little bit about how we started recording, and that I'm kind of in an unusual position in that I haven't actually read the book yet. It's not out yet. And I know from my emails that there's a review copy in the post, but it's not arrived yet. So I'm dying to read it because I love the sound of it. But can you tell me, and it sounds very much like you are applying those same social observation principles. Can you tell me a little bit about that? It's just in a slightly more kind of grown-up setting, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I mean, so it's been quite a while. So the first Gossip Girl book actually was published, well, at least in America, in 2002. Mm. And so it's been a while since at least my first book was published. And at that time, well, actually, I had a newborn baby, but that baby is now at her first year in college. So Cobble Hill is the name of the book, but it's also the neighborhood that I live in now in Brooklyn, and where I raised my two teenagers. And it is, you know, it's in Brooklyn, it's in New York City, but it's kind of like a small town in a way in the big city. And it's this very sort of almost claustrophobic community, and everyone sends their small children to this elementary school, and you have to live in the zone to go to the school, so everyone's walking to school. And I guess sort of over the years, this book was very sort of long time, and kind of my usual writing process is very quick, but this one I kind of like just, I guess it was years and years of observing and absorbing. Watching sort of the same families and seeing the same people and seeing the children growing up, and the way that feeling of sort of like you think you know these people just because you walk past their homes or you see their children going to school every day, but you don't actually know them. So Cobble Hill, the book, is really about sort of four families and the way that their lives kind of intersect almost accidentally. And it's a kind of like unconventional intersection, I'd say. My husband just started reading the book, and he like looked up after the first 50 pages or so, and he goes, "This is not a normal book."
That on the cover.
And I'm taking that as a compliment. I haven't forgotten the teenagers. There are two main characters who are teenagers. Anyone who reads it, it still has that, the humor of Gossip Girl and the kind of irreverence. And it's definitely funny, I hope. I don't want to like make any promises. I hope it makes you laugh. It's only really grown up in that some of the characters are adults, but that was true for the Gossip Girl television show as well. Like they made the books actually didn't have any adult characters, but the TV show did. So for those who were fans of the show, I think this will fit right into that. But yeah, I don't want to give too much away about the book, but I think for those who liked Gossip Girl, I think that they'll like Cobble Hill as well. And it is a real place. I think it's funny. I just assume that people know that, but of course you do. Not everybody knows that. It's just this little tiny area of Brooklyn, but it is where I live. So I've gotten to know it very well.
Can I rewind a bit and sort of ask you kind of about your background and how you got into writing? Can you tell me about your childhood? You actually wanted initially to be a ballerina. Can you tell me about that and how the idea of kind of, I suppose, what made you interested in writing and publishing to begin with?
Oh, I mean, I think my wanting to be a ballerina as a really young girl was kind of that, you know, almost stereotypical thing of girls liking ballet. I mean, I say that, but at the same time, I was really serious about it. And I think I'm just that sort of person. Like, I don't know how to sort of just dabble in something. I either do it sort of, it's like all or nothing. And I suppose I'm sort of disciplined and rigorous, and I don't know if that's unusual or it's just in my nature. If I like something, I have to really go for it. So yeah, when I was a young girl, I went to ballet class every single day after school and on the weekends, and it was just what I did. And I did that from the age of about 3, I think, until I was 16. And then I had always also really loved horseback riding, but of course, living in the city, that's not something you can really do. But my family moved outside the city when I was 16 because I had sort of switched. I decided that sounds ridiculous, but that's what I was going to do. So I was competing in jumping just every single weekend, all the time. I drove my own horse, like in England you call it a horse box, to competitions, and I didn't go to school on Fridays at all anymore. And I took a term off before I went to college so that I could compete in all the national finals. And it was like, so I've always been somebody who, almost putting aside also social things, like I didn't really go to many parties or do a lot of the things that teenagers do because I was busy competing in horse riding. So the writing thing really goes along with that. I also didn't change schools when my family moved outside the city. So I commuted by train, and it was over an hour. I didn't want to leave my school because I'd been going there since I was 6 years old, and it was coming to an end, and I wanted to be with this group of girls that I'd been at school with forever. So I commuted from Connecticut to Manhattan every morning at 6 o'clock, actually 5:30 sometimes. I also started writing on the train when I was awake. I also just fell asleep a lot on the train. And then in college, it's funny now that my daughter's in college and she's constantly like, oh, what course should I take? What should I do? I never thought about that. I wanted to take only English and only any writing course I could take. And I was just incredibly focused on that. And I guess American colleges have these like requirements that you have to do, like science and math and language and things like that. And I got those done because I had to, but other than that, I took every creative writing course that my college offered. And I actually wrote a lot of poetry. I did a double concentration in fiction and poetry. So that's sort of funny because in the Gossip Girl books, Dan is actually a poet. So that was I got to write a little bit of poetry with his character. But it's sort of one of those things where I never, after I got the ballet and the horses out of my system, or kind of, horses are still in my system, actually. I don't think they ever leave. But I really wasn't sure about doing anything other than writing. But then there's that question of, okay, well, so you want to write, but how do you make a living at writing? And I didn't know how I was going to do that because I wasn't interested in writing nonfiction. I wasn't interested in working for a newspaper or a magazine. I wanted to write fiction. And it's sort of a daunting thing. Like, how do you get a book published? And I didn't know, and I couldn't answer that question after I graduated from college. So, well, I did a whole bunch of things, but that had nothing to do with writing. But then I wound up being a children's book editor in London. my first jobs were all in publishing, and I think I was an all right editor, but it was frustrating to me to be working on other people's books and not my own. So I was an editor when I started writing Gossip Girl. I was working at a book, it's a very unusual sort of a book production company. And what they did was they came up with concepts for young adult series. Their early success series was it's called Sweet Valley High. It was something that was out in the 80s. And I had never read books like that. I was sort of a book snob. I didn't think the idea of series was, I thought they were sort of trashy. But they came up with ideas for series, and then they found writers for hire to write them. And Gossip Girl was developed by me as part of my job. But then I wrote a sort of sample for it, and an editor at a publishing house liked the way the sample was written so much that she said, well, I don't want you to do this the way you normally do things. Cecily has to write the books, and we're going to put, you know, they're her books. And so I feel like I was just incredibly lucky in that way. I was sort of discovered by an editor, and I had no intention of writing the books myself. I thought I was just developing the idea. And it sort of, I wrote the first two books actually while still having a full-time job there. I just wrote them at night and on the weekends. And then after the first two books came out, my boss said, I think maybe it's time for you to leave now and get an agent. And I went, okay. So I was really sort of, I mean, I just was stumbling along, not knowing what I was doing at all, but I got very lucky because I was discovered by this editor, and the book sort of took off and became very popular. But it was that story of how to sort of get into publishing or whatever, I don't think that could ever be repeated. I think that I was in the right place at the right time, and the books were caught on because they were different from what was out there then. But my story is very unusual in that regard.
I'm interested by the number of times you sort of, I suppose, referred to comparisons between your own life and you know, the Gossip Girl books, because something I know you've spoken about before, which is something of a recurring theme on this podcast, is the idea that women are always assumed to base their work on their own life, whereas men are granted the privilege of having an imagination. I mean, do you get fed up with people drawing comparisons? I mean, as someone who kind of grew up in the New York area and went to a pretty smart Upper East Side private school, do you get annoyed with that? Do you get fed up with it? Is it something that, I suppose, now that you're writing about the community you live in and kind of the sort of dynamics within that, is that something you're facing again, and is it something that worries you?
Well, when the Gossip Girl books first came out, and there was a sort of general assumption that I was writing sort of word for word, you know, like everything that had ever happened to me, and it was sort of, I feel like people were sort of surprised to find that no, it's actually fiction. And most of what a novelist does is invent. And of course, there's like, because I did go to a private all-girls school on the Upper East Side, I had the setting, and I could sort of draw from some experiences. But on the whole, I mean, it's really hard to sort of, it's like you take a little bit of something and you expand it, or you take something that wasn't funny and make it funny, or something that wasn't even that poignant and you make it poignant. I mean, it is a bit odd to think that, you know, you wouldn't be given credit for kind of having that much imagination or even skill. I don't know how often male authors do get asked if, like, did this happen to you? It's almost like somehow, I don't know why I wouldn't be given credit for being able to pull that off, you know?
Yeah.
And the same goes for Cobble Hill. I've, you know, recently been doing some interviews, and in fact, I was just speaking to somebody last week, and he asked me if this was all based on my neighbors. And I don't actually know anyone who's faking a debilitating illness and stealing her neighbor's food deliveries, which is what one of the characters is doing. You know, I invented her. And I like to think that, you know, that's really my job is to make, I mean, in a way it's satisfying because if I've done a good enough job of it, then I've convinced the reader that these people really are real. They do exist. And so that is satisfying that I've done such a, you know, that is what you do want to achieve. But then it's always sort of shocking when somebody says, well, you know, aren't you worried when the book comes out? Aren't you worried? And well, no, I'm not worried because these people, I invented them. So I was also asked by the same guy if I was paid by companies to do product placement. And I just thought, that is so odd. Like, that's not what books are for at all. And I do use, you know, fashion brands and real names because I want you to be able to picture exactly the bag that she's carrying or exactly the jeans that she's wearing or the shoes or whatever, or the car that they're driving. But do I get paid for it? No. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
And can I ask about the sort of the TV show, the adaptation, which, as you said, you didn't write, although I know you've said kind of positive things about it before. And I think you were asked to sort of live tweet it or something. Is that right? Is it strange when suddenly something that you've written, I mean, albeit something hugely successful that was a New York Times bestseller and all the rest of it turned into a huge series and then, you know, launched a spin-off series. Is it strange when something becomes such a kind of mega TV hit that really for kind of a generation of people was huge, was sort of seminal? I mean, I can remember being completely devoted to the TV show when I was younger, and it just, you must get it all the time, people come up to you and sort of saying how much it meant to them. What is that like?
Well, it's funny because when the first, I remember there was a party, I was just saying how much I didn't like parties, but this was a fun party, when the first episode aired, and I was with all of my sort of colleagues, actually, from when at the publishing house that when I'd first sort of developed the idea. And I was so nervous. I'd been on set when they were filming the pilot, but I hadn't seen, you know, the whole thing put together. And they were very generous with me, even though I didn't write it. I was always welcome on set. They did meet with me beforehand, and I took one of the producers on a walk around like Central Park, and we watched the girls coming out of my school, and we ate lunch at Barney's and all that. So, I mean, you know, it wasn't like I wasn't around. And I also did a cameo in one of the episodes. But anyway, when we were at this launch party for the first episode, I was so nervous because I just wanted it to be good. And I wasn't so much worried like, oh, I hope it's, you know, just like the books or whatever. I just wanted it to be good. Mm. And so I wasn't just, I was sort of overwhelmed after watching the pilot because I thought it was so good and so clever. Mm. I was so relieved. And then when it just became more and more and more popular, it was just really amazing, you know? And then of course, as you know, the years went on, I was a little bit like, well, I wonder if anyone's reading the books, you know? But it didn't, they're just two totally different things. And I mean, the TV show went on for longer than that. Like, you know, the book started when the Serena and Blair are seniors in high school, they're applying to college. And the show starts actually the year before that. And it takes them right up into adulthood. And the books, you know, didn't do that. So it became its own thing. And actually, it seemed like the writers of the show, every once in a while, they did ask me to live tweet during the episode. So I was, I was watching them, my whole family would watch them together. And my son was only about, I don't know, five or something. And I remember he would, you know, I'd let him stay up late watching with us, and he'd be talking about like Chuck and all these things, and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing to him by having him watch this. he's a very sensitive boy still, and he's 16. Anyway, it became a sort of funny little thing that got around sort of in my neighborhood as my kids got older. You know, somebody at their school or something would find out, and then they'd say, did your mom really write Gossip Girl? And, you know, and then they'd come home and say, you have to sign a book. I have to bring it to school for my friend. She, you know, nobody believes me because my children have a different last name. And that's still happening all the time. My daughter at college was just saying like one of her friends sort of like leaked the information, and then she was like sitting around drinking with a whole bunch of people, and everyone started screaming. So it's all good, I guess, as they say. You know, I had little misgivings every once in a while about things that were different, only because I felt like they could have had a really, you know, good fun with a character that sort of got lost in the shuffle. But it's all, you know, water under the bridge now. It's fine. It's not, the show is amazing. So yeah, it was a wonderful ride. And actually they're doing a reboot now, but I don't actually know exactly what the storyline is. I can't tell you. I have no idea.
Can I ask what you're like as a writer? I mean, when you started writing, as you sort of describe it, it was sort of by accident. But are you methodical? Do you have certain kind of rituals and routines that you stick to? Or do you just sort of write anywhere at any time? What are you like?
Well, okay, so Gossip Girl was really different because it was a series, and there were two books published a year. So actually with deadlines and everything, I only had about 3 months to write them. And then I would have just a week or so back and forth with, you know, com editing, and then it was just so quick. And I mean, thank goodness my children were really little, because they don't remember that like on Christmas Day I would like lock myself in a room and have to finish revisions on the book that was going to be published, you know, in a month. So having those sort of deadlines was actually worked well for me. As soon as the Gossip Girl series ended, I feel like I was a little bit adrift in a way, because I didn't have those deadlines. And it's actually taken me, I'd say, 5 years to get Cobble Hill written. And part of that is also just letting things, like life things, get in the way, you know, like sort of the things that I need to do with my children, and I don't know, even walking my dog get in the way of writing. But at some point I had sort of collected enough. I think I started writing Cobble Hill on like longhand, which is often what I do. Even with Gossip Girl, I still have the notes that they're not even notes, it's actual writing, like whole paragraphs or pages on these yellow legal pads. You know, I don't know if you have it in England.
And
I still have, I just found recently, like the last page of the first Gossip Girl book, I'd written it out longhand, and it's actually like written exactly as it is printed in the book. So Cobble Hill, I just sort of like kept starting and stopping in like fits and starts, just like I had the characters and I sort of had the idea of how I wanted to frame the story, but I wasn't disciplined because I didn't have a deadline. Nobody was asking for it. I didn't have a deal with a publisher. I didn't even have an agent anymore, because I'd sort of decided that I wanted to use a new agent. But I was determined that I wanted to write the whole book before I showed it to anyone, because I wanted whoever read it to really have a complete sense of what I was doing. And so the winter of, would it be 2018? Yeah. I joined, or it was fall, autumn of 2018. I joined someplace called the Brooklyn Writer Space, which is near my home, but it's someplace that I could go and just sort of, you get a cubicle and you're not allowed to talk or chew, no food. and no phones, nothing. And I went there every day, and within 3 months, I had the whole book written. So it's funny. I feel like that's sort of my timeline, 3 months. So I wish I'd done that earlier, but maybe I wasn't ready. I mean, a lot of my sort of what seems to be my process right now is that I don't think the way that I operate by saying like, okay, Cecily, from 8 a.m. until 1 p.m., you will write. You know, like I can't make myself come up with anything good. I have to wait until I'm ready. And then I just sort of sit down and things pour out of me. But I'm also writing all the time, like when I'm walking the dog, when I'm out. I do spend a lot of time alone and being kind of quiet. Like I am also a runner and I don't have headphones in. I'm not listening to anything. I'm listening to like my thoughts and I'm observing what's going on around me. I think, not to sound like completely like an old lady, but I do notice that like, that a lot of people are listening to something else when they're out and about. And I think if you want to write, that's a mistake. And I don't listen to music either when I'm writing, because I need to be able to hear what I'm writing in my head. But that's also just me. I really need, to sort of, it's like I have a constant sort of conversation with the people that I've created. This really makes me sound crazy in my head. And if I might overhear somebody speaking, you know, just on the sidewalk when I'm outside, and I'll think, oh, that's something I'm going to use for Roy, one of the characters in Glass of Coral. And I think being kind of tuned in to that is to like just those little things that you might overhear when you're in the supermarket or whatever is to me very important. And I use it all. I would run home then and write it down on a post-it. And use it. So there's a lot of that in all of my books, in Gossip Girl and in Cabo Hill, little snippets of things that I might have even just seen, graffiti on a wall or just something tiny that I might have, a little part of something in a magazine, like that would have been like in a little box. I just sort of gather it all and eventually it becomes something that I'll use in somewhere. I just have to figure out how to incorporate it.
Can I ask what's next to you? You've got new book out, new president. what is next? What's next on the cards?
Well, so I think I mentioned this before. There has been some interest, but I don't have like a done deal yet or anything in Cabo Hill as a for television. And this time, just because it's the kind of writing that I haven't done yet, and I'd really like to learn. I think I can do it. We'll see. I'm trying to adapt it and write the pilot for Cabo Hill, the show. So that's what I'm working on right now. And then once I've sort of done that, I'll start working on the next book, I think. But I have to wait until I, you know, suddenly go, oh, I know that this is what it's going to be. So we'll see.
And before I let you go completely, just one final question, which is a question I ask everyone who comes on the podcast, which is, if you could go back and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh boy. Gosh, I feel like this is like, I'm going to start talking about like relationships or something, but I do feel like,
funnily enough, quite a lot of people talk about relationships.
They do.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm sort of envious of my daughter right now, because she's in college and she's, you know, just having a wonderful time, let's put it that way, despite the pandemic. But I was sort of like a serial monogamist, it seems like. All through college, I had the same boyfriend. It was really boring. And I think because of him and because I didn't want to, I mean, maybe it had to do with that. I thought I needed to take every class that my college offered, but I didn't do as much kind of exploring as I feel like I could have done, even though I have had quite a few adventures. But I really wish, I'll tell you what I wish I had done, is spent my junior year, I was supposed to go to England and I didn't do it. So, and I wonder how that would have changed my life as a writer. I don't know. But I feel like I'm only now just becoming a little bit more confident, and I've just turned 50. So that's sort of interesting too, that I wish that I had told my younger self to have more confidence and, I don't know, sort of be a little bit more assertive, I guess, because I sometimes, I feel like I could have maybe gotten where I am sooner, who knows, but I'm not really I'm not one of those people who looks back and says, like, I wish I could have, would have, what, because I've really have been incredibly fortunate, really, in every regard, and I don't really have any misgivings. I can't wait to see what happens next. So,
well, on that note, thank you very, very much for your time. It was such a pleasure talking to you, and it was just completely fascinating. So thank you. Thank you hugely for your time.
Oh, thank you. It's been fun, and thank you for your good questions.
And to everyone listening, Cobble Hill is out now. So that's it from us. Thank you very much for listening to The Sunday Salon. Please do share your thoughts about the episode with me. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Alice Azania. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please do leave a rating or a review. It really boosts the show's position in the charts and helps new people find it. So until next week, thank you very much and goodbye.